Getting ready for a busy week, so we'll go ahead and get started. If we need to maneuver during the process, we'll do that. So I'll call this meeting to order. Welcome to the CVAC Public Safety Committee meeting. My name is Wayman Thurman. I'm the mayor of Indio. I'll be chairing this meeting. Today's date is Monday, November 14, 2022. And if you are in the public and wish to participate, the instructions are on the agenda. And I will move forward with a roll call.
Great. Thank you. Good morning, members. Agua Caliente, City of Blythe, City of Cathedral City.
Here.
City of Coachella, City of Desert Hot Springs, City of Indian Wells, City of Indio.
Present.
City of La Quinta.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Present.
City of Palm Springs. City of Rancho Mirage.
Here.
And County of Riverside.
Present.
Chair, right. We are one short of a quorum, but I will let you know when we reach that.
Okay. I think they're still tired from that big concert we had in Indio over the weekend. And so, we'll move along to the next item, which is the pledge to the flag. If I could ask Mr. Gregory to lead us in the pledge, that'd be greatly appreciated.
It would be my honor. Please rise, place your hand over your heart, face the flag. There's one on the screen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic
for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All righty. Thank you. The next item is public items on agenda items, public comments, I'm sorry. Do we have any public comments?
Chair, we did not receive any written comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
All righty. So we'll move on to the next item, which is item number 5, is chair, committee member, and CVAC staff comments. Do we have any comments from CVAC staff?
I'll defer to the committee first. Okay. I think Councilmember Gregory raised his hand.
Councilmember Gregory, the floor is yours.
Well, thank you so much. I just wanted to take this opportunity. We in Cathedral City, we have a new fire chief, and I know he has joined us here today in the audience. And so when it comes ex officio, I don't know if he's in a position to do so. He may chip in and say hello, but his name is Michael Contreras, and he comes to us from the Orange County Fire Authority. And he has many, many years of experience and a vast array in the fire service, and we're very happy to have him in Cathedral City. So I wanted to welcome him again to Cathedral City. He was officially sworn in front of the council, and welcome him to this Public Safety Committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Congratulations, Mr. Contreras. Did we have any further comments from the committee? And for the record, I see Councilmember Gardner is on with us. Good morning. And I want to apologize ahead of time. I know we've had elections and these things. So if your title has changed, please correct me, because we're going to be starting this new cycle. So I want to respect your position. So just please correct me if I get it wrong. Do we have any further committee member updates? All righty. I guess it's on me then. I'll give my 2.5 minutes. First of all, I this past weekend we had Veterans Day, so I just want to wish everyone a happy Veterans Day. And I know a lot of our public safety personnel are veterans, and so I just want to thank you for your service. There were a lot of activities and ceremonies from Coachella to Indio, all the way to the Palm Springs parade, which was great. So I want to thank all of our electeds for really recognizing our veterans in our valley. And every year as we move forward, I see more and more activities and more ceremonies, and we can't do enough. You know, it's just an honor to be able to really show appreciation to our veterans. So just thank you for that. And also, I just want to make a couple announcements. I don't know. I don't want to jump ahead if anyone in the ex officio updates will say this, but I'll just throw it out there for right now. They could piggyback on it. But The Riverside County Sheriff's Office will have a blue light ceremony on Monday, December 12th at 6 p.m. It will be in Riverside, and it's going to be at the County Administration Center for the Chambers, and that's at 4080 Lemon Street in Riverside. And once again, that's on December 12th at 6 p.m. And the blue light ceremony is symbolic of remembrance of those officers who paid the ultimate sacrifice, and also honors those officers who continue to work every day. And also, there'll be another blue mass ceremony at OLPH Church here in Indio, and it's for public safety, non-sworn and sworn personnel, volunteers, and families. And that is this Friday, November 18, 2022. And the address for OLPH is 82450 Bliss Avenue, Indio, California. So, I mean, those are two, great events to attend and recognize our public safety personnel, those who have paid the ultimate sacrifice, and those who are still working, like myself, that has to go to work at 2 p.m. today. So thank you for that. And I will get that information to staff if anyone needs any further information for that. And I also want to just call attention to some challenges I think we have in our society. It's not unique to the Coachella Valley or any other city, but I really want us to think about this as we move forward this next fiscal year in policy and decision-making in our community as it pertains to public safety, whether it's local or regional or state and federal. In our valley, we've seen an uptick in gun violence throughout the valley. And a lot of those guns are tracing back to ghost guns. So I think we really need to have some education and work with our chiefs and our specialized units in the valley and the county to see what we could do from our position. I think it's imperative that we get the opinion of our personnel. You know, they're the experts. They're working on this stuff every day. And how we can collaborate, not only as a committee, but as our respected councils and positions that we stand on in our committees. And there's also been an uptick in smash and grab robberies throughout the state. And I think it's finally coming down to our valley. We recently had a couple here in Indio. And I don't know if anyone else is experiencing that, but I think we need to continue to work with our law enforcement to see how we could curb that, how we could put measures in place. I know some communities have, flock cameras up now, different mechanisms in place to prevent such crimes. And as we continue to work with our colleagues who are up in Sacramento or Washington, D.C., we really need to bring this to the table. And, from my position and my experience, I think when it comes to crime, gun violence, I think it leads back to controlled substances and drugs. And we all know the challenges we have with heroin and fentanyl in our society. So I think we really need to focus on that and work with our law enforcement community on that. And lastly, something that I see in Indio, and I've seen in some of our unincorporated areas, are the street racing or sideshow is what they call it. When they're doing donuts in the intersections and some of those things, I believe some cities have taken some measures on doing that already. I hate to bring more laws and ordinance to the table, but sometimes that's the only thing to do, or find other ways to curb that in our communities because it's dangerous. And it's also very costly, when we're working on these big infrastructure projects in our community, we're working on our, improving our transportation, and our roads are being torn up. Nonetheless, I don't want to see anyone get hurt. We just had a report of a vehicle here in Indio on Fred Waring and Jefferson. Hits a pole. It's a race car. A sports car. I can't say if it was racing or if it was doing sideshows, but I believe this was last night, So it's definitely happened. If you see it in your intersections, you see the tire marks in the intersections. We need to work on how we could curb that. So those are just some of the challenges I see in our community. And I think it's imperative why we still enjoy all the good things going on in our valley, especially now the weather's cooling down, a lot of activities, a lot of concerts, a lot of art shows. We still need to continue to work on keeping our community safe and also aid in our fire and response and the tools that they need to respond to incidents when they need to. Okay, so I'm going to conclude there, and I will move on to item number 6, which is ex-official updates. And I know we have a new fire chief from the city of Cathedral City, Chief Contreras. I don't know if he's on, but if he likes to join us, we could bring him in as well.
And while we're doing that, just like to note for the record, we do have a quorum.
Okay, we have a quorum. And I'd like to ask, you know, our ex-official updates, you know, I touched on some things, and I did it very vaguely. But if you have information or things that we need to do, please come forward and let us know how we can assist in mitigating some of these challenges we have in our community. And I see we have Chief Contreras on there. I can't see you yet, but I see you on there. Chief, there you go. Oh, he's coming in.
Are we there?
We can hear you, Chief. We just can't see. Oh, there we go.
There we go. I forgot the lens. Thank you very much for the welcome. Councilman Gregory, thank you for the introduction. I just want to let you know I'm really looking forward to the fact that you have a team like this. I think speaks a lot about the Valley and what we're all trying to accomplish. So I look forward to working with all of you. And if there's anything I can do, don't hesitate to contact me.
All right. Thanks, Chief. And welcome to the Coachella Valley. We're looking forward to working with you. You're in a great city, a great valley. So thank you for your service, sir.
Thank you.
All righty. So we will move to the next item, which is actually before we move on, do we have any other ex officio comments or anyone?
I have a quick comment, Mayor. I had my hand up for a quick minute. In regards to the sideshows that are going on, has there been any attempt to use any local business cameras or any of the license plate readers? Has your city implemented any of those? Have those applied in any way? Is there an opportunity to perhaps extend that to the unincorporated areas?
Well, I know our flock cameras have been working, but you know, once they capture things like that, you know, it's not going to be reported to us, you know, to keep the integrity of an investigation. However, those are measures that we can use to curb that in our major roads. And something that I encourage in the program that I'm working on in the city is also a Ring doorbell program with our police department to aid in solving some of those issues and crimes that we have in some of our communities, because they do work. So business cameras are very optimal and curbing some of this stuff that goes on, is capturing license plates or vehicle descriptions. Yes.
Or what about putting up signs that tell them, you know, there's increase to cameras or something that lets them know you're not as anonymous in this area as you think you are, just to let them know there is surveillance in the area.
Yeah. So what we're doing with that program, and I believe La Quinta has it as well, once we put those flock cameras up, as soon as you enter into our city limits, there's cameras that say safety cameras are in place. So folks know that their flock cameras is out and they're capturing license plates. If crime is committed, they'll be used to solve that crime. Yes.
Chair, we can make this an item for a future agenda. I do know that Councilmember Smotrich, as well as Commander Woodbury from the CHP, have both had their hand up as well.
Okay. Councilmember Smotrich, you could go ahead if you want to speak on this.
Thank you. And I really appreciate you bringing this up and calling it to our attention. And I would love to see at the next meeting perhaps somebody from law enforcement to give us updates on what exactly is happening and the accountability is taking place. You know, I think it's wonderful that we have cameras and you can get license plates, but, you know, until laws change and there's policies put in place where people are going to be actually charged and there's going to be accountability and penalties for their behavior, I think the police and all law enforcement has their hands tied. These sideshows and these racings and fentanyl and drugs coming across our border, this is a problem for all of us. It's for all innocent citizens that are driving or walking, our pedestrians, have families crossing the street. This has become a nightmare. But until that we can resolve with some kind of accountability and some kind of law changes, you know, taking pictures and getting license plates, if these guys are in they brought into the police station, there's a history taken, there's time taken away from the police that would normally be on the street just to fill out the reports, and then they're out on the street again. So I think it's really incumbent upon all of us to see what laws can be implemented or changed so that there is accountability and people are held responsible for their actions. Because if they're in a revolving door, there is no punishment. And I would love to hear from law enforcement how they can act on this and exactly what can be done and where their hands are tied. Because if they're going to arrest people and then just let them out 2 hours later, it doesn't accomplish anything. And I keep hearing this from people more and more and more, and people are frightened. People are concerned. People are wanting to protect themselves. They don't know how, and they feel like they're always looking over their shoulder.
Thank you, Councilmember. Let me go over to our CHP captain. And the captain could speak on this. And then what I'd like to do is ask staff if we could put some of these items on our next agendas, future agenda, so we could really have some good dialogue and have discussion of what some of our cities are doing or what we're able to do in our local cities. So Captain Woodbury, if you want to go ahead and speak on this, and then I have Councilmember Pena, and then we'll move on to our next item. You're still muted, sir.
There we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. You know, let me first talk about retail crime and our task force. You know, the governor has given us money to have a specific CHP retail crime task force that operates throughout the state, especially to target those smash and grabs. Last year, we were directed to go down into the city of Indio and Palm Desert specifically to help and assist the sheriff's department and the PDs. Just as a visible presence. So if you see us in your cities, it's because we are directed to go down there by the governor. As far as the sideshows, very, very dangerous activities. And, you know, coming from San Bernardino County, LA counties that I've worked in the past where it's very, very prevalent and you have hundreds of vehicles at a time, we're actually doing very well, I think, in the Coachella Valley. We need those. If you see those crimes occurring, we need them reported, though. We don't have a huge incidence of sideshow activities in the Coachella Valley. When we do send units. We have the helicopter that can go up and the airplane specifically designated to assist in this in combating that crime. What we do when we do catch the people is their vehicles get impounded for 30 days minimum. That's per the law. And they're charged with the misdemeanors. What will happen if they're not actually prosecuted with a DA is that the Highway Patrol then will have to pay for the impound of the vehicles. So it's very important that when we do everything right so we can get the vehicles taken and that the people that are doing the crimes are actually having to pay for the vehicle impounds. Just a couple things we're doing. But, hey, put out to everybody that when you see something, please say something. We need to get those calls in right away so we can actually be proactive and reactive to those crimes.
And so when you do bring these people in and they are charged and you take away their cars for 30 days, and is there any punishment that goes along with it aside from, you know, are there costs? Are there, you know, is there any kind of jail time if there are injuries?
So if there's injuries, then that will have to be up to the district attorney as far as what they're going to file and what they're going to actually seek for prosecution. And then it'll be up to the judge eventually if they get prosecuted. As a law enforcement agency, we don't actually deal with it, that. We leave that to the district attorney's office.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
What we could do is staff, you know, in the interest of time, we still have some other items. If we have time at the end, we can come back. We could have some discussion, but I'd like to really bring this back for a more in-depth discussion. And so our chiefs and our CHP could really give us an in-depth maybe presentation on what's going on, because it could seem a little complicated if it's so quick hitting, but if we could go in depth on this, I think it'd be very beneficial. I had Councilmember Pena, if you still wanted to speak on this, I had you as my last speaker.
Thank you. And I know that Councilmember Gardner had her hand raised as well, too. I know that this is going to be the last meeting for Councilmember Smotrich. I'd like to thank you for your service. I wish you the best going forward, and we hope you won't be a stranger to this committee in the future.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been a pleasure serving, and I know I ask a lot of questions, and but I have everyone's safety in mind, obviously. I am moving on. I'm not retiring from life. I'm moving on to be more of assistance to our veterans and their programs that bring awareness to the problems of our veterans and the fact that 22 veterans commit suicide every day. And this is something we all need to be aware of. And if you're a female and you're a veteran or you are presently serving, your suicide rate is going to be 2.5 times that of a male. So this is something that I will be working on very diligently. And yes, I will be back. And I've enjoyed working with all of you in all the cities. You're such a wonderful group who are so conscientious and want to make good things happen for our valley. And it's been a pleasure. And I will miss you all. So thank you.
And we look forward to partnering with you in the future on your work with the veterans as well. So thank you. Thank you.
Me too.
Councilmember Gardner, if I can I move on to the next item? And if you need, you know, if we have extra time, we can always go back and speak. But in the interest of time, I want to move on to our items. So our next item is item number 7, consent calendar. And if no one wishes to pull anything, I'll entertain a motion.
Move approval, Cathedral City.
Second, La Quinta.
So I have a motion by Cathedral City and a second by La Quinta. All in favor, say aye. Raise your hand.
Aye.
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 And any nays? Abstentions? I see none. So our consent calendar passes. So we'll move on to item number 8, which is a presentation by the community education efforts by the Coachella Valley Disaster Preparedness Network. And it'd be Board President Carla Dilley that will be handling this item.
Great. Thank you. Erica, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Erica, I understand you're going to be pushing the slides through.
We will keep them moving, yes.
Okay. And she's going to keep them moving quickly. First off, thank you. My name is Carla Sullivan Dilley, and I'm the president of Coachella Valley Disaster Preparedness. And I want to let all of you know that this is genuine. I served for a city for 18 years, Parks and Community Services Superintendent, full service city, worked closely with all my fellow employees, and best 18 years of my life until recently. So thank you for all that you do, and that is genuine. So moving right along, Coachella Valley Disaster Preparedness Network. What are we? Who are we? Our mission is to prepare citizens of the Coachella Valley for catastrophic events. We provide training, education, and networking. We are not first responders. We are here to support first responders. Next. How long have we been around? It started in the year 2000. By 2017, it was still going strong. I was not involved back then, but I saw a need to create some better systems, organizations, and a funding mechanism if we were going to be of help to Coachella Valley. Hence, we've been a nonprofit for 5 years now. Next. We focus on all levels of disasters. The Emergency Management Department has definitely said, yes, earthquakes are very important in the Coachella Valley, but there's all kinds of other things too. So we do train on flooding, power outages, all types of other disasters. Next. Most recently, we have expanded our training program to be called No Community Left Behind. When we first started over 20 years ago, it focused on just basically HOAs and getting them prepared. But what we found out through the last few years is not everybody is in an HOA. There's a lot of neighborhoods, communities, mobile home parks, apartment complexes, just even a cul-de-sac with 10 homes. They need to know their neighbors and have a plan. Next. Who do we serve? 9 cities of Coachella Valley, the 8 unincorporated areas, and hopefully working with the tribe soon. Next. We do in-person training classes. We are at the RAP building. We have an office as of last June. We do online training and self-study programs based on the pandemic. Next. How do we get this done? We have community partnerships, and we survive on grants and donations. We are an all-volunteer organization. Our largest grants came from LISTOS, the State of California Ready program that was launched right at the beginning of the pandemic. We received $110,000, and we reached out to 28,000 individuals. We focused on the vulnerable populations. We have many community partners. And again, we do not create any of our educational materials. We get the facts from you, and I work directly with Earthquake Country Alliance and many others. And that is how we educate the residents of the Coachella Valley in English and in Spanish. Next. The LISTOS Ready Guide, we gave out over 28,000 copies of those along with many other materials. Every time we do a tabling event such as this where we did National Night Out, $5 in materials are given to each individual for educational purposes. We work with the Sheriff's Department, National Nights Out, Opening Day of Little League, Rocket Rules, our little buddy that is very influential from our very own city of Rancho Mirage. We've given out thousands and thousands of materials. It's wonderful educational safety materials at all different levels. And we also use this with our special needs population because they can relate to these booklets. Next. How do we get most bang for our buck when we're a limited board of 20 volunteers? You work with the partners that have access to large neighborhoods. So one of our community partners has been Desert Resort Management, Associa, with a minimum of 120 properties that they manage. Fortunately for us, they believe in disaster preparedness in their communities. So we've been training their property management people and volunteers. Next. KESQ. Does anybody ever know that disaster preparedness gets complacent? Well, I have to say that KESQ helps us all the time by providing every opportunity to be on the news. The week of shakeout, we had at least 13 time slots where they reported our activities at College of the Desert as well as at Sunnylands. Next. We have utility departments that we partner with, most recently Southern California Edison. The shareholders provided us with grants to do our No Community Left Behind training. We had our October session, and we're going to be doing another session on December 1st. Next, our hospitals. How impactful was it for us to have a panel? And we were able to tell people, the hospitals were able to tell people, and mind you, this was BC before COVID, that at any given time between the three hospitals, they only had 84 emergency beds. Why do you need to be personally prepared and have a plan in your community? Because you have to take care of your neighbors and yourselves. We have coming up with the help of Desert Regional Medical Center to stop the bleed in-person training classes in 2023. Next. We work with the EMD, RIVCO, keep them rolling, Cal OES, next, American Red Cross, CERT. All of our programs are based on CERT principles. Again, we do not make anything up. We provide the facts out in the communities. We also work with FEMA. Next. And it's all done by our board of directors, all volunteer. And in the 5 years that we have been providing these services. We have over $450,000 in value of volunteer hours, which equates to about 7 full-time positions in a city. That's been almost one person per city that we've given of educational training commitment, helping first responders, getting people prepared so that when the big one does hit or the other minor big ones, that they can take care of themselves until the real first responders arrive. Next. These are just pictures from Sunnylands as well as College of the Desert, and we've literally reached thousands of people. Where we have a presence up at the Living Desert. This happened to be World Disability Day. We'll be participating in that again. We're a very inclusive-minded nonprofit. Access and functional needs. We have had excellent training from Earthquake Country Alliance to be very mindful of people. We're not all created equal. We may not be able to hear. We may not be able to see. We may have mobility issues. We have to identify those people in our communities so that they're going to be helped in the event of a disaster and not left behind. Next. How do we get the word out? We have over 600 on our constant contact email list. We're updating our website. We have a Facebook presence and we have a YouTube channel. A lot of information can be found on our website. So in-person trainings within communities, they can just pull up and train for half an hour and go through a lot of our library and be reminded of all kinds of things that they need to know, like stop the bleed and chair carry, CPR, et cetera. Next. Again, we don't make this up. We just deliver the message. This is, as we all know, Earthquake Country Alliance. Drop, cover, hold on. And we have it with all the disabilities as well. Next. Part of our resource library. Continue. Next. All kinds of resources. And you can keep scrolling. Stop the bleed. Next. This is at the RAP building when we have done some of our trainings. We do assembly style seating as well as classroom style seating. And we can currently hold up to 65 people with the new COVID restrictions. Next. We're here to support you. There's really no gimmick. A lot of us took our backgrounds and said, what can we do to help support our first responders in all of the cities? Next. So first responders, emergency management departments, all of you. That is who we are here to support. Next. More importantly, we reach a wider audience together. You have a safety event coming up. You share that information with us. We send it out to our over 600 focused associates that are all about disaster preparedness and safety. They get it into their communities, and then we have it posted on our website as well. Next. So let us be a resource for you. What can we do for you? How can we partner together? I know the city of La Quinta on here. I've worked with Dana recently on her CERT training. And by us being able to send out those notices, the city of Palm Springs is the same thing. They get full classes. And they can have waiting lists so that we can get people that you just don't have a CERT training and you don't have a full house. So we're here to help you. The other thing that I'm going to mention is that we've continued to grow. Again, we're all volunteers. There is no paid staff. I haven't come before CVAG since it'll be February of 2019. And a lot happened with the pandemic. We kept on training, educating. We were boots on the ground. We partnered with the food banks. We distributed PPEs along with disaster preparedness material. We have a lot of partnerships, so it's not just the 20 of us. But we depend on grants, and I have to tell you, disaster preparedness grants, they're few and far between. We were blessed to be part of that Listos grant program. We get donations, and we have had some very generous donors. But our overhead with maintaining an office now at the RAP building and having all the facilities to do all of our trainings, a storage unit that is filled to the gills with all of our educational materials, all of the printing, the insurance, our website update, everything. we could use some financial help. And I think if you look at a minimal donation or support of $25,000 to Coachella Valley Disaster Preparedness, you would see that for every dollar, that is magnified tenfold because it's being delivered by volunteers. So you don't have the benefit overhead. That's my presentation. I'm happy to ask questions. I want to thank Erica for her patience in working with us. She was also going to be sending you a short video because I tried to condense a lot of information, take advantage of this wonderful opportunity. The video is kind of an overview of this. So as in good speech telling, tell them what you're going to tell them and tell them again what you just told them. So any questions, I'm happy to answer them. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dilley. What we'll do is we'll get your information back out to all of our members and so they can reach out to you and possibly work with you on some donations. But we appreciate the partnership. A lot of the things that you spoke about are things that we don't think about sometimes, but we always know that we have folks like you and other nonprofits out there focusing on these things that may happen when we're going about our day. So we'll appreciate it. And in the interest of time, I'd like to continue to and actually thank our board president, Ms. Dilley, for your presentation. And I'd like to move on to our next item, which is item B, public safety concerns related to Mylar balloons. And I'll pass that over to Erica for an introduction.
Thank you very much, Chair, members. This is a follow-up from an item that you first took up, I believe, earlier this year before the summer break on Mylar balloons. You'll recall at the time we discussed state legislation and the movement statewide to address Mylar balloons and the public safety concerns. And if you don't remember the timing, I'm sure you remember the video of the exploding balloon along the power line, which remains one of my favorite PowerPoint images yet. Since then, the legislation that this committee recommended supporting, AB 847, did pass out of the legislature, but it frankly became a watered-down timeline. And the details of that are in your staff report. Essentially, the bill initially aimed to ban the sale of Mylar balloons by 2026, and the final version has a much longer ban rollout, which could start in 2027, but may extend after 2031. So with that in mind, we did want to re-present this to you for consideration of any additional steps. And we do have Antonio from IID here, the expert in all things Mylar, to address. Is there any interest in a regional approach, a model ordinance? If so, we will bring that back to you based on your feedback today. And if not, we will we'll just continue to monitor this item. That is our staff presentation, and Antonio and I are here to answer any questions.
And if I may, Erica and committee members, if it's okay, just to briefly just once again thank the committee. We had this presentation in June. At that time, AB 847 was still moving through the process. And the committee did recommend sending a support letter for that legislation. The bill did get signed, and we've heard from SDG&E, which was the sponsor of the bill, that the prototype balloon that they are working on or that they've hired a third party to produce has provided some positive results. So sometime in the future, not short term, but in the long term, there may be an alternative to what we consider the traditional Mylar balloon today. In the meantime, however, we still continue to have recurring power outages that are caused by Mylar balloons that are unfortunately not disposed of properly. So that continues to happen, not just here in the IID service area, but every electrical service area, whether it's a private utility that runs that grid or a public utility like IID, this continues to be one of the top challenges for us when trying to educate our customers, but also trying to limit the use of these balloons and the damage that they cause to our system, creating these power outages. So in the IID service area alone, dating back to January of 2021, we've had over 56 outages that have impacted close to 22,000 of our customers at one point or another. So With that, the committee, we do have a recommendation from, at least from IID, and we would love to have some support to potentially look at not just an outright ban of Mylar balloons. I know that that may not be something that the committees and the cities or even the county would accept, but are there any places or areas in the public spaces that maybe we can limit the use of those Mylar balloons? So for one example would be at city parks, or when a resident or a constituent pulls a permit to host a park or host a party at a local park, there's usually a list of items that are prohibited. Could we potentially just think of maybe adding Mylar balloons to that list of prohibited items? So again, these are just ideas, things that we've been looking at. There are some cities in California that have passed outright bans, Glendale, Hermosa Beach, Malibu, and I believe one more that I may be missing. But even if it's not a full ban, again, maybe taking a smaller step towards trying to mitigate some of this, these causes of outages, but also to help further educate our communities of the dangers of Mylar balloons that are not disposed of properly.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Ortega, for that. And I mean, that's good information. And, you know, especially that there's an option for folks to use. I know that we have a lot of parties and, you know, things here in the Valley. And so at least we're giving folks an option to use. But as far as, you know, different locations, I mean, I'm not an expert at that. I know the numbers exactly. But if we were to do that, I think that would work as well, or at least it'd curve it a little bit, especially around some of our transformers and things like that, because we know one balloon can make its way to a transformer and take out half of a city, you know. So, I mean, I've seen it with my own eyes. So that's just, you know, my thoughts on it. Maybe we look at some of the areas around transformers, you know, to add to that list. But I would be in support of doing something like that until we can find a reasonable option for folks to use when they're having their celebrations. But I don't know if anyone else has any.
May I ask a question, Chair?
Absolutely.
Since I know that in some places the concept of an outright ban would be a little difficult to get approved, the real challenge with Mylar is helium, right? Mylar on the ground is not a problem, but are there cities where perhaps there's an ordinance that said that Mylar balloons cannot have helium? For example, I know that they've got the little ones on a stick. Are there anything that you've seen across in your research where there is not an outright ban, but perhaps just a limitation on what can fill the balloons?
No, nothing that I've come across, at least until now. It's really just once you inflate the balloon, and if it's not deflated properly, then it becomes airborne, right? I think just seems that helium is a preferred fill for these balloons because they can stay inflated for sometimes up to 2 weeks. So I think that's really the challenge, right? Is that the industry seems to have, that's the preference of what they use to fill the balloons with. You could buy helium tanks at Party City nowadays, right? And they're smaller, but I think that may be a more difficult challenge for us and the industry to try to curb the use of helium.
Yeah, just with so many different supplies that have come across, all of the balloon art, a lot of them really now have become more latex-based now that the creativity is more affordable with all of the balloon kits that you can get. So I think that with the prevalence of those DIY, there's less Mylar balloons that even come in those kits. So again, that's what I was wondering if perhaps in different cities where, you know, I love the idea of saying not in the parks. I think that's an excellent suggestion, and I'll be bringing that forward to our council meeting this week. But thank you. I think that's something worthwhile to explore, that if we can't do an outright ban, then just say you just can't have helium in it.
Great points. You know, I'm learning this as we go. I didn't think about not allowing helium, but that's another good option. So, but we know that AB 847 was signed. So I don't know if we shall do anything in the meantime. You know, it's up for discussion if we want to provide direction on pursuing a model ordinance or limiting sales. So I don't know if we have any other further marching orders.
Mr. Chair, just a quick comment. I think that we can have staff continue to monitor this as we go on, and perhaps we look at something of maybe a limited time range, especially during the summer months out here in the Coachella Valley, when it's hot and you really do need that air conditioning going, that we can limit times of sales during those times as well, too. I know that that would kind of get into graduation, but that might be something that we can look at as well, too, because the real problem out here is when we get into these hot summer months and electricity goes out, it can really wreak havoc on a lot of people.
Very excellent point. Excellent point. Councilmember Smotters?
I think that all these points are excellent, and the fact that we can make suggestions to our councils and to our city leaders that maybe we can put into action some kind of notice or resolution to ban them at parks. Because as you say, especially as we get closer to summer, where air conditioning is so imperative, you know, this affects everyone. And just saying that, you know, we just ban them at parks will probably take away a lot of the problems that are possibly going to affect us all. I don't know if that's in our range of possibilities, or if each city is onto its own and can pass whatever ordinance they wish, but it's something to think about.
Yeah, hey, I think those are excellent points. What I would suggest, we continue to monitor it. We work with Mr. Ortega and some of our energy companies and see what other folks may be doing across our state as well, to see, you know, what has worked and what hasn't worked, you know, and we can't dictate where these balloons go once they go in the air. So it's just going to be an ongoing thing. And even to ban them, I think banning them would be pretty tough anyway. So I like to just continue to monitor it and continue to work with Mr. Ortega as we move along. So that would be my recommendation.
Great.
Okay.
Well, it sounds like we have a consensus from the committee. I did want to note for the record that the Agua Caliente are now here as well. And if there's no other action, we do have one more item on your agenda.
Yes, yes. So we do have item C, which is federal and state legislative advocacy in 2023, and that will be handled by Mr. Emmanuel Martinez.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, members of the committee, Emmanuel Martinez. Here before you is a very brief presentation regarding our 2023 legislative platform. As you may all recall, we have two lobbying firms representing CVAG. We have the Ferguson Group that represents us in Washington, D.C., and the political group in Sacramento. Our platform, which is relatively new, was first adopted in February of this year, soon after we retained our federal and state lobbyists. We've engaged in monitored priorities, particularly in the transportation, but across all the various topics that impact CVAG. And today we are bringing this before you to update our legislative platform to make sure we have a cohesive and well-thought-out platform for the 2023 legislative cycle. Our platform, as you may all recall, is broken down into a few key categories, which are transportation, energy and the environment, homeless and affordable housing, public safety. And this is where we would like to seek your input on that particular category under both the federal and state. And then we also have broadband as a category and fighting for fairness, which is under our state title there, which really relates to making sure we have tools that benefit the Coachella Valley, such as fighting for more tools other than the CalEnviro screen. Some of the updates include more local control as it relates to funding. I mentioned CalEnviro screen, which is not very favorable to the Coachella Valley. Also tracking the Inflation Reduction Act and the various programs. One of the key priorities is in this year and next year is going to be heat mitigation and climate resiliency. And so that is in there, and also making sure we have access to local funding mechanisms, such as in other counties. So very briefly, this is going to all the various CVAG subcommittees, transportation and energy and environment, which got the presentation last week. We're here before you today for public safety, and then we'll be at homelessness. And we get input from all the committees. We'll have a nice, cohesive, well thought out platform for the executive committee to consider December 5th. So with that, that is my presentation, and we're here to gather any input, comments on the public safety sections. Doesn't have to be today. You can get back to Erica and I at a later date, and we'll be happy to include your thoughts or comments into the platform before we get it to the executive committee. So happy to answer any questions you may have.
And Chair, if I might just add on, there are two sections to the platform, both the state and federal. They are highlighted in your packet for the topic, but we did want to draw attention. There are two different sections.
Great. Thank you. Do we have any questions or comments or suggestions at this moment for Mr. Martinez? Yes, I see some hands up. Let's go with Councilmember Cantania.
Actually, I saw Mr. Fettis' hand go up first. Thank you.
Well, you guys should draw sticks. Mr. Perez, go ahead and take it. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Council Member. And good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. There is an additional issue that I would like to propose that the committee consider adding, and that is advocacy around the need for more judges and more courts. Just to share a little bit of information, a recent report put out by the Judicial Council that looked at the number of judgeships and courts throughout the state identified for Riverside County that we have 89 authorized and filled judicial positions, but we have a need for 112 positions. So essentially, we have a shortfall today, estimated shortfall of 22 judgeships. Which is about 25% of shortfall, which is amongst the highest, I think it's second highest in the entire state. The state is funding four additional judgeship positions for, I believe, the current year budget, but that would still leave us well short. You may have all seen a press release put out by our district attorney recently about the number of releases of dismissals, I should say, of cases. There were more than 500 criminal cases recently dismissed by the courts because of the need for more judgeships. So I would ask the committee to consider adding that to the platform, and our county governmental affairs person can certainly work with Mr. Martinez and others on some language around that topic. Thank you for your consideration.
Yes, staff, and I actually like to bring that back for an item so we could really understand what that meant to those cases that were dismissed. So I'd like to bring that back for a future meeting as well. Thank you for highlighting that, Mr. Perez. So we'll move on to Councilmember Cantania.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just have a quick question for follow-up. And again, this may be a good place for it. It may be a follow-up email if you'd like. But when you were doing your presentation, you said that the Cal EnviroSpring 4.0 is not very favorable to the Valley. Can you please explain why that is? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. And this really pertains more to some other larger programs like in transportation. You know, although it's favorable for cities like the eastern part of the Coachella Valley, Coachella and Indio, most of the Coachella Valley does not fall within the top 25 highest scoring census tracts. And that's a criteria that is often utilized by programs such as those that are in the climate investment portfolio, those that are funding by the greenhouse gas investments funds. And so that really leaves out those areas like in Palm Springs that may have low-income residents but may not have all the other pollution indicators that really elevate it to the top 25 highest scoring. And so that leaves those people out of those funding opportunities. And so there's other metrics and tools like or definitions like the AB 1550 low-income definition that is favorable, and we strongly advocate for utilization of that metric and tool for Coachella Valley to make sure that we get more of a fair share of funding to the Coachella Valley. At the same time, yeah, we strongly support, you know, cities of Indio and Coachella, right, getting their fair share through Cal EnviroSpring, but as a regional government and from a regional perspective, we want all other census areas that have low-income populations and have need to also qualify for those funds. So, but one update just on that is that the new Cal EnviroSpring tool and the SB 535 definition got updated this year to include tribal lands. And there's a staff report 9B that talks about that and gets into more detail, but essentially that elevates the opportunity to secure funding for tribal controlled land. So that's a positive for the Coachella Valley. So I hope that answers your question.
And maybe just to piggyback on that, the Cal Envire screen issue has been a longstanding concern for CVAG's committees and staff and the access to fund. And while certainly there are census tracts in the Eastern Coachella Valley that can access these funds based on their scores, it still does not properly categorize the socioeconomic differences across our valley. And we probably don't have time for our soapbox on Cal Envire screen, but of our entire CVAG region, there's about 8 census tracts that fall within the areas. And that includes all the way to Blythe. It's a extreme concern. We've been up in Sacramento. We've advocated for changes in the law. We think our cities, when have access to funding, they can compete for the funding. And that's really what's reflected in the legislative platform.
Great, thank you. Mr. Martinez, I know we could get back to you on this. When would you need the input by so we could get it to executive committee?
It'll be ideal to get input and comments by the end of next week. That way we have sufficient time to put those into our staff reports and update the platform.
All right. Appreciate that. Thank you. So that's the recommendation. So we'll review, and we did hear some discussion, and we can also get back to you on further by the end of next week. Correct?
That's correct.
And we did have a request from the county about judicial fairness and the number of judges. Is there a consensus from the committee members? I'm seeing from a nod of hands to include something like that. So we'll work with the county to make sure our platform mirrors their position.
Absolutely. Thank you. All righty. So that will conclude those items. We'll move on to information. Item number 9, the attendance records in your packet. Also SB 535. And California Climate Investments is also in there for travel designation. We also have the launch of the countywide Faces of Fentanyl campaign. Very important. Please read that and share with your community. And so we'll move on to item number 10, which are public comments on non-agenda items. Do we have any public comments?
Chair, we did not receive any written comments, and I do not see any hands raised.
Alrighty, thank you. So we'll move on to the next item, which is item 11, announcements, which are upcoming meetings. Our next public safety committee meeting is Monday, January 9th, 2023 at 9 a.m. It has to be a Zoom meeting. Our next executive committee meeting will be Monday, December 5th, 2022 at 4:30. That'll be a Zoom. And before I move on to our next item, which is adjournment, I just want to recognize again Councilmember Smotters for her service to our community and our committee, and good luck on your future endeavors. And we know you may be quote unquote moving on, but you're not going to be far. We'll always be reaching out to you and have open arms for you to partnership on some of your different things you'll be doing with the veterans, and we appreciate that.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate all the work that you are all doing. Keep up the good work and help keeping us safe.
What is the name of the organization that you're working with, Iris? I really appreciated the statistics on female veterans that I had not heard before.
Well, the main one that I'm working with at this point is Angel Force USA. And it deals with creating an awareness amongst all people and in all the departments that there is help available. And if you are in distress or know anyone that is, there's so many opportunities for help, and we're trying to create awareness, and with just speaking out makes a difference. So thank you all, and thank you for your inquiry. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Our veterans need all the help they can get.
All right. Great. Thank you for your service, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
And have great holidays. Okay. And safe ones.
Absolutely. Our next meeting is January 9th. In between January 9th, we do have Christmas, we have Kwanzaa, we have Hanukkah, we have New Year's, and so there's going to be a lot going on. So, and if I missed anything, feel free to jump out and share. So I want to wish everyone a happy holiday, a safe holiday. And as we move through the holidays, let's continue to be very cognizant of what we can do to keep our community safe during the holidays and while we're with our families. So,
and Thanksgiving, where we can all be thankful.
How'd I forget that one? My favorite one. Okay.
Right. We all have a lot to be thankful for.
Absolutely. So I want to thank this committee and looking forward to this next year. So if no one has anything else to add, I will adjourn this meeting at 10:01. So
okay, thanks. Happy holidays. Be well, everyone.